Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we pay tribute to a legendary guitarist gone too soon.
He's up with the rock gods now. All right, sad news again in the world of rock and roll. The passing of Eddie Van Halen on October 6th. He died of throat cancer, which apparently he had been battling for roughly 5 years or so, is what I understand. And so I think now is a good time to pay tribute to one of the, pretty much understood to be one of the greatest guitarists in rock and roll history. So, the show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we invited Patrick to join us again, Kevin Spain, because he was on when we did a whole week talking about the David Lee Roth era of Van Halen, and that would have been in February of 2018. Go back and listen to those episodes if you can. I would encourage listeners, they start with episode 286, if you can believe that. And there's a whole week worth of stuff there, and we talk, obviously quite a bit about Eddie's contributions to the band, and we'll just sort of recap, I think, some of that here. You'll probably hear us, if you did listen to those episodes, we may repeat ourselves, but that's okay. I guess let's do first thoughts, and then we also got some listener calls. We put out the word on Facebook that we were going to record this episode, and we got some listener calls, and we can play those and sort of react to those as well. But let's open it up to Kevin first. When did you hear the news, and what was your reaction? And what thoughts do you want to have about Eddie Van Halen's impact?
Well, I heard the news. I was actually out with a former USA Today coworker having a few beers Tuesday night, and I got a text from my friend who we went to see them when you guys were doing your first podcast. They played at the amphitheater out in Manassas. I don't even know what it's called
the Jiffy
Lube. We don't
Lube
use
Live.
That name. Don't use that.
Okay. So anyway, so he saw it first and he texted me. So yes, it was upsetting. I knew Eddie had been sick. I didn't realize he was this bad. And it's a tough day, man. You called him one of the all-time greats. I mean, if I did a Mount Rushmore of guitarists, he's on it. And I think he's there's guys who did a lot for music and changed guitars, Jimi Hendrix being one, obviously, but I think Eddie was one of the others. And it's tough, man. He's a link to my younger days.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Rock and roll was fun.
That's exactly what hit me too, and why, sometimes when celebrities die, you sort of like go, oh, that's too bad, and let's, recognize their impact that they had or what made them important or what legacy they may have left behind. But then there's some guys, when you hear of their passing, it has a deeper impact because it meant so much to you at some time in your life. You know what I mean? And that was how I felt with Eddie Van Halen. I was kind of in a fog for a little while hearing this news because it was just like, it's like I texted a friend of mine. I said, Eddie Van Halen died, and so did part of my youth,
Yes.
And that's how I felt about it. So Patrick, any thoughts on your end?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think you guys said it right. It's like losing a friend or somebody that was always there for you, as you're going through your formative years. And I'm going to say something right now on this podcast that I probably have never said before. And if I have, I'm going to say it again. I was once arrested after a Van Halen concert. So It means a lot to me. I got to say, David Lee Roth was not there. Sammy Hagar was, but I got arrested. And I just want to get that out there. And, you know, in the sense of feeling emotional about Eddie Van Halen's passing, I mean, you know, as you said, Jim, it's part of your youth and it's part of your development. It's part of your understanding of rock and roll, I think, most importantly to me. Yeah. And I'll tell you, the first time this thought ever struck my mind was when I was reading Rolling Stone magazine. It was an interview with Eddie Van Halen. The interviewer read a quote to him saying that a certain guitar player, I can't remember who it was, had come over to see Eddie, and Eddie had all these guitars laying on the floor. And the guy was telling the story to the interview, and the guy picks up a guitar and started to play it. And he was like, "This thing is way out of tune, Eddie. Like, you know, what is it?" And he goes, "Oh, I'd let them all tune them to themselves. I let the guitars tune to themselves." And that was the first time in my mind that I ever thought, wait a minute, why do you have to tune E, A, D? Like, why do you have to follow that structure that's so accepted? Like, who's forcing that on you? And I never thought before that a guitar could make a weird sound just because it was tuned differently. And if you listen to his solos, his flights of improvisation that are spastic yet also precise, he was just expressing this really creative musical mind. And he bridged, you know, some cool guitar playing technical masterpieces with mainstream rock and roll. And they covered the Kinks, and you know he was at the heart of all that. I mean, if you could never have anything in a band called Van Halen without Eddie's guitar, it really was the whole band in many ways. And somebody on Twitter put that scene from Back to the Future where he puts in the Eddie Van Halen tape and presses it at Crispin Glover to kind of say, "Here's the future."
Right. Yeah. Right.
Who are you?
I was thinking about that too, and we may have even talked about this before, but it does. It's like so perfect as like to present that to someone in the 50s, like on the movie, would seem like so foreign. Like it would seem so incredibly
amazing.
Like you would not be able to compute it, right? You wouldn't be able to comprehend what is coming into your ears, right?
Your kids are going to love it. That's what he said.
That's right. That's exactly
it's true.
It.
Totally it, yeah.
Now, okay, so let's get a little bit into just, you know, like specifically Eddie and some of his musical background, because I read some of this stuff. I knew some of it before. I read some more today and yesterday. You know, he grew up in a musical family. His father was a jazz musician, played like clarinet, saxophone. He also found out that Eddie first learned to play the piano. So he was, you know, kind of like a lot of kids, like kind of forced to take piano lessons and learn classical music and all of that. He didn't really ever take much interest in learning how to read music, and so he would play classical pieces by ear and win competitions. Isn't that crazy?
right.
And it goes to what you were saying, Patrick, about sort of his kind of like not quite thinking like everybody else. Like like he would get these notes back. He would win a competition at some recital, and they would say, like, "That's such an interesting interpretation of that song." And he was like, "I thought I was just playing it the way it was supposed to be played."
Right.
You know?
Right. Played it exactly the way he heard it.
Right. Yeah. Right. But his mind just worked a little bit differently than everybody else's, right? In a good way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Totally. That's the great genius of Eddie Van Halen. Totally. And, you know, even that name, Van Halen, it almost
that's
sounds
so cool.
like a, you know, a German composer, you know, that was a mad genius or something like that.
It's so cool. Then apparently he decided he wanted to play the drums, but then he realized Alex was better at the drums.
Right,
so he was like, okay, I'm not going to do that. And then he picked up the guitar and started playing the guitar. And, you know, my understanding, his main influences that he cites are Clapton and Page. Those are probably the two biggest ones. But
you know, not bad.
Yeah,
not a bad pair.
Pretty good.
To
pretty
use.
Good foundation.
Yeah. Right. But when it came to the tapping style that we you know, associate so much with Eddie Van Halen, he did, there's a couple differences of opinion on where that came from, but one of them is Steve Hackett from Yes did that, I guess, before Eddie, and that may have been one influence on him. But the other thing too is that, like, flamenco guitar, that was a big thing in flamenco playing going way back. And it's so funny because he did sort of flamenco guitar in Spanish Fly. He obviously knew how to play in that style. And that flamenco guitar is also kind of really like shredding kind of style of guitar, just in a different genre of music. But you can totally see that comparison, right?
He didn't invent that style, but I mean, he perfected it. There's no, I mean, the videos from a lot of those albums in the early 80s. In fact, I think, Jim, it was your favorite, 1984. I think a lot of the videos from that album are of concert footage with him, you know, just it's right there. It's right in his face, and he's playing, you know, he's doing the tapping, and he's just sitting there smiling at the camera like it's nothing. He was amazing playing that style, and it really changed a lot of the way people play for rock and roll. I saw one thing about how, you know, it was talking about how bands like Deep Purple and some of those bands were sort of coming to their end at the end of the 70s when Van Halen took off, and their style reinvented a lot of that, you know, the heavy metal, that sound that they were used to, and it sort of sped it up, took it in a different direction and a little more fun than that way that they had played in the early 70s. And he just sort of changed everything with the way he played.
And I know that we talked about this before, but I think that fun factor is huge. You know, Clapton, if you take Eddie's sort of two main influences, like, Clapton was just sort of like this effortless, like, blues player. You know what I mean? He'd go up on stage and he sort of took his stage presence cues from the old blues masters. It's just really go up and stand there and play, and people will be so into what you're playing that they'll just have to pay attention. Right.
Yeah. And your tortured lifestyle too.
Right. Like, right. Right. Page and Led Zeppelin, we're just, you know, as much as I love Led Zeppelin, let's be honest, very like self-serious kind of band, right? And then there were a lot of other hard rock bands, you know, heavy metal bands, certainly, you know, with Sabbath and so on, that were also just very kind of like serious, heavy bands. And the same thing with a lot of other hard rock bands. And then with Van Halen, it was like, it was fun music. It was like, you know, let's take all of that, but let's actually like go back to what rock and roll was supposed to be, which is fun, party, danceable, you know, music, right? And one of our listeners, Joe Fleischer, who's a big metal guy, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he posted something on Facebook essentially like, you know, Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing may have been the band's biggest contribution, but second to that was the fact that they smiled on stage, right?
Totally, man. I'll say, you know, really quick before we get to our listener calls, that that's such an important point. They epitomized a certain kind of rebirth of California cool. Like, you could rock out in California, you could look like David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen and, you know, Michael Anthony, and you could just have fun, and you could, you know, you heard these legends about, oh man, one time Halen played this pool party in California and it was like the most rocking party of all time. Like, it's a totally different take on, you know, what was cool for us who lived on the East Coast, especially, you know, it was like, wow, you know, it's another kind of Beach Boys, like, hey, it's not, you know, that surfing, you know, Woody, like, you know, catch the wave, you know, drive to the burger stand thing, but it's a different, like, hard rocking, and they understood Deep Purple and all those bands too. So
it was a party at the beach instead of surfing and everything, you know,
and it rocked.
Smoking and drinking on ringside, on top of the world. the sand. Whoa, what a beautiful girl.
Yeah,
they'd be, and they'd be drinking Jack Daniels on stage, and that'd be cool. Very decadent, but very Californian, very, you know, very inventive. I mean, they're, you know, it was an update on certain bands, but
yes,
you know,
but and then one last thing I'll say here too. Again, I'm probably repeating myself from before, but in listening to these songs with fresh ears again today, I'm what amazes me all these years later. Is as much as you think of Van Halen, you have an image of sort of excess, rock and roll excess, right? Musically, they actually showed a lot of very respectable restraint.
Absolutely.
Their songs were not long. They didn't do extended jams. They didn't, you know, stretch it out any more than it needed to be. The stuff was tightly written. Even Eddie's solos, as like with all the pyrotechnics, are short and like to the point, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
You could tell they were pop music fans, number one, and they were just doing a different take on it, right? And you look back and you I'm just amazed at all the things they didn't do that they could have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But smartly did not do, right?
And I think 1984 is the ultimate example of that. They came back after, you know, and reinvented themselves with a massive hit album with a song that was dominated by synthesizer.
The keyboards. Because
he knew that was going to be the best way to sing that song or, you know, produce that song.
I think he knew
song.
That. And I also think he was getting bored with the guitar. And, you know, and he was just like, well, what else can I do? Right. And
He may be the musical director in Rock and Roll Heaven. They may be like, wait, let's wait till Van Halen gets here and then we'll like figure it out.
You brought up the short songs and being tight. And I don't know if you guys remember, but when we did the week breakdown and we all picked some songs that we liked.
Yep.
1984, one of the songs that I picked was Drop Dead Legs. And the reason I like that song is because it's one of the few times there's a lengthy solo, and it's how the song ends. It goes out on a pretty long Eddie solo. You just didn't get that in very many of their songs.
No.
You know, the solo was real short. It was real compact. No. And so that was one of the reasons I like that song so much is because he actually sort of, you know, kicked back and played for a few minutes.
And that's really cool. I totally agree. But yeah, unlike the other guitar gods, I don't think that was his interest. He didn't want to do these extended jam kind of things. He was like, get in and get out, you know. But in that 30 seconds or whatever time I have, you're going to be, your head's going to be blown.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we won't even get into how many guitarists he influenced who took that the wrong way.
Exactly. and that to me, I think is probably the biggest contribution.
So many.
Is that, yeah. There have been other guitarists who have been virtuosos, right? I mean,
right.
I can name some people. That's not really the point. Point being, rarely do those virtuosic sort of players have the kind of feeling that Absolutely. Eddie Van Halen had. That, I yep. think, is really right. the key, is that he was technically, like, super proficient, but he also, like, in his heart and his soul kind of, like, knew what made the song work. With the right. song, you know what I mean?
He deployed his talent to maximum efficiency every time, and he married Valerie Bertinelli. So there you go.
All right. So we get to the calls here. We got quite a few to get through. So we'll just we'll run through these. First up, we have Craig Rosen.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. Craig Rosen calling from the suburbs out in Porter Ranch, California. Saw Jim's call for memories about Eddie Van Halen, and I have one that I thought I'd share. Yeah, I was, you know, my friends and I were into the first album. I liked it, but, you know, at that time I was really a huge Aerosmith fan. They were my band. I know, you know, Patrick was into Kiss. Jim, I'm not sure what was your teenage band, but mine was Aerosmith. And, you know, I thought Van Halen was cool. I liked them enough. And turns out in 78, I went to this big festival. It was a two-day thing at the L.A. Coliseum called the California World Music Festival, and that was California with two F's for some reason. And anyway, Aerosmith headlined, the up-and-coming Van Halen. This was 1979. They were second billed. And, you know, it was a day-long thing. You know, some of the other bands, Boomtown Rats, opened, and they were like punk rock to this crowd. I think Bob Geldof asked the crowd to salute them, and everybody flipped them off, and he took a Polaroid picture for the folks back home. And some of the other bands, I think April Wine and Toto. But, you know, when nightfall came, Van Halen took the stage. And they were really great. I mean, they really kicked some butt. And they were so great, in fact, that people started leaving after their set. And, you know, that didn't sit well with Craig, teenage, probably 16 at the time, the hardcore Aerosmith fan. And, you know, these people are walking out even before Aerosmith takes the stage and during their set. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? It's Aerosmith. But you know what? I have to admit, Van Halen blew them off the stage that night. They were great, and went on. I saw them one more time, the original lineup in the prime. Saw them at the Forum. The next year in 79 after Van Halen 2 came out. Great band. R.I.P. Eddie Van Halen. Keep rocking in the suburbs. Bye.
That was a great show he went to.
Sure sounded like it.
Unbelievable. Man, you're talking April Wine.
Next up, Jim Petrillo. We're going to stay out in California here.
Suburban Party Line, Jim and Patrick. EPJ reporting. It's already a sad day for America, and then news came in of Eddie Van Halen. Wow, I'm sure like everybody said, it just hit hard. It hit hard. He's one of the few guitar gods. And you add, you know, his distinctive style and his distinctive look of his guitars, and he's unparalleled. But I just wanted to focus on a couple things because I also think he was Van Halen. The tired argument is, was it Dave? Was it Sammy? The answer was Eddie. Was it Alex on the drums? Was it Michael's perfect backing vocals? No, it was Eddie. He was Van Halen. Anyway, good Pasadena boy. And, you know, he's everybody's rock god, but he's my Casio god. I don't think the argument is between Dave and Sammy. It's when, you know, when Dylan went electric? What about when Eddie went Casio? I seem to remember a bit of a controversy, but I broke down his best riffs, and he's got a weird fear of the Black Keys. Listen to this one. DG, very spacey. That's what, oh, as a fan of ELO, when I heard Eddie go Casio, forget it. And then everybody knows this one. No Black Keys either. That No Black Keys. Love you, Eddie. Rest in power.
All right. So there
rest
you go.
Power,
you,
get man.
You get a little demonstration there too. I will say,
fabulous.
Listen to Jump, not just the riff, but listen to the keyboard solo. So the solo section in that song I find really interesting. It starts with the guitar solo,
right.
Which just kind of comes out of nowhere because it's not a guitar centric song really, but the guitar solo like kills in that song. It's really, really good. Jump! And then he does a keyboard solo, but he kind of plays it like a guitarist might play the keyboards, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't come off as like what a keyboardist might come up with to play that solo. It's all like all single notes and sort of like arpeggios and stuff like that. It's
totally.
Kind of like trying to shred on the keyboard.
It's, I think, a credit to his talent and his genius that he said, hey, I'm not tied to the guitar, even though I'm a guitar god, you know,
right.
I can do it with another instrument. And well said by EPJ.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, okay, here's Kevin Bartlett.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. It's Kevin Bartlett out of Forest Park, Illinois. It's been a few hours since I heard the news of Eddie Van Halen passing. And this one just really hits hard. Van Halen, I shared with the podcast a few years ago, I think, that, you know, when I was 14, it was the first show that I went to, rock show that I went to. And it was the Fair Warning Tour, and didn't miss a tour after that, up and through like a Foreign Lawful Carnal Knowledge. But Eddie and the boys, they were my entire existence, right, when I was a teenager. I mean, that band was insane, and everything about them, you know, with Dave, you know, the showman. And then even when they went to Sammy, I you know, I didn't mind Sammy, you know, at all, and because I liked Sammy as a solo. And I thought that he brought just a different musical, you know, experience to Van Halen. But Eddie and what he was able to do with the guitar, it was just transformational. And I've had a few bourbons. So anyway, guys, appreciate you doing the show about Eddie Van Halen. I think for most of your listeners, he's in that wheelhouse of just having a huge, huge influence on all of us. Take care. Bye.
Well, despite those bourbons, Kevin was very eloquent, and I appreciate hearing from him. And, you know, I think when he was saying, like, Van Halen was my whole world, right? Many people embrace this band, you know, as kind of their band. And I'm sure there are people who had the Van Halen experience, you know, like I had the Kiss experience, mm-hmm. but that was their band. And I think, you know, in many ways, like EBJ said, when Eddie, now that Eddie has gone, sort of Van Halen as the band and the yeah. legend has gone too. So we're kind of putting them to rest. That's how important he was.
Yeah. All right. Here is Mike Coley.
Hey guys, Mike Coley calling in from a rainy Rome, New York. Wanted to talk about Eddie Van Halen a little bit. Growing up, Van Halen was, you know, one of those bands that really made you take notice of heavy music that was still fun. And I've talked about Kiss on the show in the past, and Kiss was kind of my gateway. But Van Halen was my true gateway into the heavier style of music, and they were just flat out fun. The combination of those four guys in the original lineup of the band was a perfect storm of musicianship and fun. And obviously there was issues later on with the band, but even when Sammy joined the band later on, he continued that fun aspect of that band, and even though they went a little more pop sounding than what they had previously been doing. But the cornerstone of that entire band was Eddie Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen was the rock guitar god, and he's the guy who every guy my age, and probably some girls, but in my worldview at that point in time, I was only hanging out with guys that liked hard rock music, and we all wanted to play guitar like Eddie Van Halen played guitar. There was no second place. It was always Eddie. Everybody wanted to be Eddie. And, you know, I've kind of fallen off the Van Halen wagon, you know, in recent years. But when you guys did your Van Halen week on the cast, I dove back into them, and I really, really gained a better appreciation for them as an adult. The musicianship is just top-notch in that band, and Eddie's the leader of that top-notch. And this one hit me just as hard as Ronnie James Dio dying, and Chris Cornell dying, and Gord Downie dying, and Neil Peart dying. All those guys, I grew up with all those guys, and when you're a kid and you're listening to music in your bedroom by yourself, and just dreaming of life as a rock star, and letting these people into your life, and they become a part of you. And Eddie Van Halen became a part of me, so much so that even in my college years, I kind of still hung on to him, even though. That was the era of grunge and hair metal when I was attending college for the first time, anyway. But I worked on a radio station in college, and I had three separate shows per week. On Mondays, I did an alternative rock show and based on MTV's 120 Minutes. On Wednesdays, I did a deep track classic rock show, kind of like the XM, Sirius XM channel, deep tracks. And then on Fridays, I did a Headbangers Ball style show. And it didn't matter which show I was hosting that, you know, during that time. But my promo card that I made for that show, my show was called As the Worm Turns up in Potsdam, New York. And when I made the promo for that show, I made sure to mention that every show, smack dab in the middle of every show, was a Van Halen rock block. So it didn't matter if I was playing alternative music, classic rock, or heavy metal. There was a Van Halen rock block smack dab in the middle of my radio show. The only song I refused to play was Jump. But anyways, thanks for doing this. Hopefully I got it in time. And thanks for all you guys do for the community. And rest in power, Eddie Van Halen. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. I hope Mike's okay driving in the pouring rain.
Seriously. I just got to say that was great by Mike. And I wish that Mike and I had dropped out of college together from the same college. That would have been fun.
All right.
He played every song but Jump, Jim.
I know. Well, I don't know what to say. To me, Jump is would fit in with the alternative stuff. It's kind of new wavy. But anyway, let's move on to Mark Neese.
Hey, Rockin' the Suburbs. This is Mark Neese calling from Okemos, Michigan. Just to call in regarding Eddie Van Halen. Boy, this one's pretty tough. I mean, this is Van Halen where if you grew up in the 80s and went to high school in the 80s, like I did, and probably a lot of your listeners did, Van Halen were the biggest band in anybody's high school. They were the kings, you know, especially if you're like me and you went to a Midwestern small town high school. Van Halen were the biggest. I have a couple of memories. Never saw them live, unfortunately. Wish I had, but I didn't. Never had the chance. But a couple specific personal memories regarding the band come to mind. I remember sometime in late 1983 being in, I think it was before history class in high school, and the topic of Van Halen's new album came up, which would have been the 1984 album. And I remember there being quite a bit of controversy among the kids that the idea that there might be keyboards and synthesizers on this album, oh boy, that was pretty controversial. People were a little bit scared about that. But as we all know, that ended up being a blockbuster album, probably the biggest of the career. Other memories, I mean, Van Halen's influence extended even in my college years. My freshman year in college was 1986. And I can remember Van Halen being played very loud in stereo bars on our residence hall floor, especially Van Halen 1. You know, the very beginning of Run with the Devil that has the car horns, the Doppler effect car horns. That sounds really good when it's absolutely blasted from, you know, 150-watt speakers in the dorm room. So that happened a lot. So you had Running with the Devil, and then, of course, Eruption came after that, and you had to play Eruption. You had to play that at 11 also. Got to play that loud. So, yeah, I have some great memories of hanging around in dorm rooms, listening to Van Halen 1, first album, drinking a few beers, and just blasting those first few songs. And, you know, of course, the entire album.
There you go. Okay. It was good beer drinking music. I will say that too.
Totally, man. And one thing I connected with about what Mark said was that, you know, like, we always talk about, like, oh man, back in the days, you know, we had to like research all these records and read like 50 million fanzines and, you know, find these obscure albums and all that stuff. But Also, one of the most interesting learning tools was you evaluating popular music. You're like, oh, all the kids in my high school like this album. You know, it can't possibly be good. But then can you honestly listen to it and be like, maybe I do like this. Maybe this does have a lot of merit. And that was interesting about Van Halen. You know, a lot of people like them, and you did sit around, like Mark was saying, in your freshman dorm room, and people liked it. And maybe it was a bonding point for you, but also it was really good. You know, like you actually dug it. So there's a lot of pop music like that.
All right. We got three more real quick to get through. Here's Stephen Routledge in Scotland.
Hi, Jim and Patrick, faithful interns and fellow Rocking the Suburbs listeners. Stephen Routledge here calling you with my comments on the sad news of the death of Eddie Van Halen. I'll be the first to admit that I've never been the biggest Van Halen fan. I think they, like a pre-permanent vacation Aerosmith, were always a much bigger deal stateside than over here. Nonetheless, as a guitar player, only an imbecile would fail to acknowledge the gargantuan influence that Eddie had on the craft of guitar playing. In terms of guitar heroes, there were many before and many after. However, I would posit that Eddie was the last of the goalpost movers. Before him, you had Chuck Berry, Hank Marvin, the triumvirate of Clapton, Beck and Page. Before the greatest of them all, Jimi Hendrix, changed the game for all of them. After Hendrix, there were plenty of technically skilled players, but none that changed the game in the same way that he had until Van Halen came along. What guitar playing can be divided into three stages in my mind: pre-Hendrix, post-Hendrix, and post-Van Halen. Many of the players who followed him would achieve greater technical feats, my own personal favourite player, Steve Vai, being one, but none would change the game in the way that Eddie did. The key to all these players I've mentioned is that they were not only highly skilled, but played popular music that sold in large quantities. They weren't just musos, but successful rock stars. Since Eddie, probably only Slash and Jack White would have achieved the same sort of guitar hero status, but I'm sure they would both happily admit that they didn't alter the landscape of guitar playing like Eddie had. They were simply very good players who made popular music. After Van Halen came along, every guitar player had to learn new techniques and up their game. For that, he will never be forgotten. Rest in power, Eddie Van Halen.
All right, real quickly here, Patrick, what did you think of Steven's eras of guitar playing? So there's the pre-Hendrix, the post-Hendrix, the post-Van Halen.
I think it's right on target for electric guitar.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's some different things depending on the style. But yeah, for hard rock electric guitar, absolutely right.
All right, here's Scott Boykin.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, faithful interns. This is Scott Boykin. Wanted to call in regarding the passing of Eddie Van Halen. I'll speak for myself, but I'm sure I share the sentiments of a lot of listeners out there who, if you were male growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, probably went through a Van Halen phase. I know I certainly did. And they just made a huge impact on my early teenage years. Probably from the ages of 11 to 15, there was no band I listened to more than Van Halen. And I can still recall vividly seeing them on the 1984 tour and how much fun I had and what a great night that was. Eddie was certainly in a class by himself. I remember when Van Halen first, you know, appeared on the scene in 1978 with Van Halen 1. And Eddie at that time was really the lone American guitar hero. Back in the late 70s, when you thought about guitar heroes, you know, you had your guys like Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Ritchie Blackmore. But really, since Jimi Hendrix passed in 1970, America really didn't have a guy of their own that they could put up against guys like that. And Eddie became that guy. And, you know, if Eddie wasn't as better than those guys, he was certainly as good. And his influence is all over the place to this day. And it will always be around. And regardless of how you feel about 80s hard rock and that whole hair metal scene, without Van Halen, hard rock of the 1980s would be completely different. You know, they were the template for what all those bands that came after them tried to emulate. Granted, none of them even came close. But they influenced so many bands in the 80s, it was ridiculous. And every guitar player out there tried to be Eddie Van Halen. They all failed, but that was the ultimate goal. And, you know, and Eddie's passing really just takes a bit of my childhood with it. Like I said, you know, in my young teenage years, Van Halen was the band for me. So it's a tough one. It's a tough day, but I just wanted to get my voice on here and just say thank you to Eddie for all the memories, all the music, and rest in power, Ed.
All right, very nice. And then one last one here from Tim Hoffman.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, this is Tim Hoffman calling in. I'll be real quick. I'm sure lots of folks are calling in with remembrances, condolences, messages. Want to add to the conversation here. I just want to say, more than 40 years after I first heard Eddie Van Halen playing the guitar, that moment is still so fresh in my mind. I remember exactly who I was with, where we were going, what we were doing, when we popped that cassette into the car stereo, that debut record, and heard Running with the Devil, into Eruption, into You Really Got Me, into Ain't Talking About Love, and then I'm the One. And I knew that I had never heard anything like that before. I knew this was just a crazy new sound with so much power that everything had changed in rock and roll at that point, and that our generation was witnessing a true genius on the instrument. Rest in peace, Eddie.
Those were all really nice messages.
Beautiful. Yeah. Heartfelt and obviously touched deep down, and just appreciate everyone that's called in, taking the time to share their voice here. And it's a lovely tapestry to Eddie resting in power.
Rest in power, Eddie Van Halen.
Rest in power, Eddie.
Definitely rest in power.
And thank you to everyone who called in and shared your emotions and memories. It means a lot.
It does mean a lot. All right, let's get out of here. Talk about something happier tomorrow. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been...
Kevin Spain.
Thanks, thank you, Kevin.
All right. Go back and listen to Van Halen Week, everybody.
Yes.
Go do listen.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later. And then the one last thing, we also have to mention his contribution to the song Beat It, right?
Oh, because totally. Well, there you go.
That was huge. And not only did he apparently, you know, go in and record that solo, which was really big deal for Michael Jackson to cross over at that point in time and appeal to rock fans, but also supposedly he had a hand in sort of arranging the song itself made the song better when he went in and gave some tips to the, you know, to Quincy and like the engineer and like how you can make this song better. So he was
totally,
he was not just coming in and laying down that track and then leaving, you know,
giving tips to Quincy. That's pretty interesting.